start. This is taking place on Skype broadcast and will last 30 minutes. You'll be able to hear us, but we are unable to hear you. Dr. Rue will make some opening remarks and then we will take questions. Thank you to those who submitted questions in advance. We will get to some of those following Dr. Rue's remarks. You can also submit questions anytime during the event using the Q&A panel and Skype broadcast. Please just share your name and outlet when submitting a question. And as time allows, we will take live questions submitted during via the Q&A. And our media relations team will respond to any questions we cannot answer during our 30 minutes by the end of day today. We'll also have a video recording available that we can share in our resources for journalists area by end of business today as well. And with that, I'm happy to introduce Geisinger's president and CEO, Dr. Jaewon Roo.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you everybody for joining us again today. It's good to be back here with you. Happy New Year. And as we've done before, we're kind of following the same framework where we'll provide some updates, give you what we're seeing, and then get to some questions. So let me get started in the interest of time. We continue to see alarmingly high rates of infection and of hospitalization. I think that is has been the story, even from our last press briefing with you all. It continues to be the story. At the same time, as you all know and as you all have seen, vaccinations are now well underway. We've been delivering about, at this point, over 1,000 vaccinations a day. I think we've done over 14,000 in total. We've had to ramp up to do that. We're opening more sites in order to do that. And as we get those doses, we are quickly moving to get them into people's shoulders. Just this week, in fact, just a couple days ago, we started administering the second doses of vaccine to those who got them at the very beginning of our effort. So that's all reassuring. At the same time, though, and you're going to hear us say this a lot, despite having the vaccine slowly hit its way and hopefully not so slowly, and I think you'll see that in the coming weeks and months, but as we cascade through vaccinating the public and the community, as that happens, it's important for all of us to keep in mind that this is not the end. This means we still have to do all of the precautionary efforts that we've been talking about all along, whether it's the masking, the distancing, the hand hygiene, all of those precautions still stay intact. It's very important that we do that until we get to the levels where enough of our community is vaccinated so that the levels of activity of the virus really hit low levels. So wanted to be sure to communicate that. We have been working through what's known as the quote-unquote 1A group. As you all know, the federal and state authorities have put together guidelines, which we have been pretty tightly adhering with. And that 1A group involves mostly healthcare providers. And we've been working our way through that group, including, of course, our own employees, but also outside of our own employees as well. We imagine we will be able to expand into the entirety of that 1A group sometime in the coming week. Fingers crossed, but we should be well positioned to do that. And for updates, want to give everybody our website address, geisinger.org/COVIDVAX, COVID and then VAX spelled V-A-X. You can go there for the latest and greatest information because all of this is changing and evolving very quickly. And so the website is probably the easiest way to make sure that you're getting the most up-to-date information. There's some FAQs on that website. Should be able to field a lot of the questions that you all may be having. So let me go ahead and walk through some of the numbers and otherwise. So I mentioned that the alarming trends continue. And what that does is it keeps us very concerned and on our toes as far as the capacity needs inside our hospital and inside our delivery system. The healthcare workers right now are getting vaccinated. So I think that's a good thing because as we've said to you all along, capacity is not just measured in beds or vents or what have you, but it's also in staffing. And so it's critically important that we get the healthcare workers vaccinated so that that aspect of the capacity is not limiting us. We also have, at the same time that healthcare workers are up to bat right now, if you will, we have frontline essential workers and high-risk individuals who are sort of on deck. They're in the grouping called 1B, as in boy. And so as soon as we get through the grouping 1A, we'll be proceeding to the grouping 1B. And as you heard about, you know, the precautionary measures continue to apply even as we're going through these various groupings with the vaccine. I think we're at a pretty critical juncture here, and we've said this since really late November into December, where we saw these concerning trends and the activity level of the virus continue to pick up. We are continuing to see that. I think this is consistent with what you would expect during full-blown community spread. And I think it's important to remind people, as we've done before, that it's not just a disease of the elderly. In fact, in our hospitals, those folks who are sick enough to be COVID positive and in our hospitals, about a third of them continue to be younger than 65 years of age. So it really goes to show that it can afflict young and older, all alike. So I think it's something to be aware of and continue to keep our antennas up. Many of our sites are at full capacity as they've been since early or mid-November. And that's projected to continue because, of course, our leading indicators, as we've always talked about, when you know that the positive number of tests go up, you know that your activity level in the hospitals will also continue to be up over the next week or two. So that's how we know that that capacity and the demand on beds will continue to stay relatively high. At the same time, we saw in December, another stat to share with you all, about 14% of those patients hospitalized with COVID in our hospitals have died. And that was for the month of December. Now, there is some context here. That death rate is lower than what it was back in the early phases of the pandemic. So I think that's somewhat reassuring. But at the same time, as we've talked with you all about, the numbers of people who are in the hospital with the disease are substantially more, which means that, you know, even though the percentage and the rate has gone down, the number of people have gone up. So net-net, more people, more deaths have occurred in the month of December. I think the preventive things, masking, distancing, hand hygiene that we've talked about all along, now we could add a fourth, and that's the vaccination. So we've been encouraging members of our staff, but also community providers. And as this continues to go, we'll be encouraging those in the community, whenever your turn in the prioritization is up, please go ahead and get your vaccination, whether it's through us or others delivering the vaccination. It's going to help the entirety of our communities, the more of us that get vaccinated. So as far as the numbers themselves, in the second half of November, we had a positive test per day average of about 240. And you've heard us quote that number before. For the entire month of December, that was up to about 400 positive tests per day. And these are tests done in our lab. And so far in January, we're about a week through here, we're seeing about 300 to 400 positive tests per day. And the positivity rate, so the percent of those that we test that come back positive, it was about 23% in December. And so far for this first week of January, we're seeing that up as high as 30%. So the percent positivity rate is another one of these leading indicators. And that level being as high as 30% really goes to show that this virus is still very active in the communities. And as we've done before with you, we're going to remind you that back in the summer, we had gotten that percent positive rate down around 2 or 3%. And so now being as high as 23 or now 30%, that's a concerning trend. And so, of course, we're keeping our eyes on that. At the same time, since the beginning of the pandemic, we have seen 32,000 positive test results. And that's a pretty big number. Just to put that into perspective, it's larger than the populations of most of the towns around here. In fact, it's 3,000 more people than in the entire city of Williamsport. So it's a lot of people testing positive, and I think that's important to know. As we've also mentioned with you all, we've taken the approach of managing the dimmer switch. So Rather than shut off all services or all non-emergent services as we did last spring, we've been able to use that dimmer approach where we're able to dial down some of the activity and the inputs, whether they're elective, non-urgent procedures or services. And what that does is it frees up capacity, whether it's space or people inside our facility so that we're able to take care of the folks who are coming in with more COVID. By doing this, by managing this dimmer, we've been able to free up about 90 beds worth of capacity. It's an awful lot. And that's what has helped us accommodate the increasing numbers of COVID, while at the same time making sure that any clinical issues that are urgent continue to be taken care of as they always are. So that's how we're managing that. And then in the meantime, if anybody has had services that have been postponed as a result of this dimmer approach, of course, we're monitoring how they're doing, checking in with them regularly, making sure that the disease or the clinical condition is not progressing in a concerning way. All of that continues to happen. I think this is a good reminder of something that a lot of folks, it's not as obvious. COVID impacts not just those who have COVID, but it actually impacts those who don't have COVID as well. Because if you have the heart attacks and strokes and so forth, or the stomach pain, or the knee pain, or the back pain, any sorts of things that we ordinarily provide services for, of course, that is impacted by increased activity of COVID. And so that is why all of us as a community should be keenly sensitive and aware and caring about this. The other thing that's worth mentioning, and I think we've mentioned this once or twice as well, our workers, our employees are only mere reflections of what's going on in the community around us. We are also members of our communities. And when there's community spread to the level that there is, of course, it's impacting our employees as well. And so we have seen, you know, hundreds of our employees that are out on any given day as a result of COVID activity. And so even more reason why when we say we're all in this together, we truly are. Whatever we can do to decrease the level of activity in the communities helps everybody. And so that's why we're so focused on those precautionary measures, plus now the vaccine effort as well. So let me shift gears and talk a little bit about those vaccine efforts. It's changed a lot. I think it's a very quickly moving environment. That's why we're referring people to that website so that we can keep up to date on the latest and greatest. And as I mentioned, we're now at the point where about every 5 minutes we're administering a vaccine, and we've been doing over 1,000 a day. By the end of next week, we should be at the point where we have given over 19,000 first doses of vaccine, meaning 19,000 people by the end of next week will have been vaccinated by us. That's a great start. And we imagine continuing to build on that effort as we know that there are many folks that we still need to work through. We also administered over 300 second doses just a couple days ago, which was our first day of administering second doses. And so as the days go by, we'll do more and more second doses at the same time that we continue to get people in for those first doses. We are also now at the point where about a half of our employees have gotten vaccinated, which is great because for all the reasons that I said earlier, when we get our employees vaccinated, we're able to make sure that we have the workforce to manage that capacity and continue to provide the services that we do. And as I mentioned earlier, next week we imagine and we hope, and if all goes according to plan, we'll be able to roll out to the rest of everybody in that 1A group. Thus far, we have been working with our partners to make sure that folks in that 1A group, even outside of Geisinger, have been getting vaccinated. So folks like EMS, folks like providers working in nursing home environments who are at higher risk environments, we've been focusing on prioritizing and making sure they get in. What that's done is, I think some of you are aware that Secretary Levine and the federal authorities have advised and really required that about 10% of any hospital's allocation of the vaccines go to folks who are outside their own employees. And even before that announcement, we were well above that number. And I think that's good reinforcement that we're staying lockstep with the state and also at the same time paying attention to the groupings of people, whether they're employees or not, who really need to be prioritized even within that 1A group. And as we've gotten more of them vaccinated, we've now been able to move again next week to being able to expand to others in that 1A grouping. I think the other is we get a lot of questions around, well, when will the subsequent groupings happen? And on that, I think we've been pretty regularly, I'd say multiple times a week, connecting with the state and making sure that whenever they are ready to advance those groupings, that we'll be ready right there with them. But again, I think the entire state at this point is still laser focused on getting that 1A group done before we then are able to move to 1B. I think the other thing that you all have read about, the logistics around this vaccine are fairly complicated, whether you're talking about refrigeration and the timing of when you take it out of the super refrigeration into the standard refrigeration into room temperature. There are timing requirements with each one of those steps, which creates a little more complexity, and it requires a lot more planning. And so I do want to take an opportunity to thank our team because it requires that kind of level of planning and execution and focus, and our team has been fabulous, and we want to really take the opportunity to thank them. And that also explains sometimes why the exact predictability is not there as we would all like. You know, it's one thing when you exactly get the shipments versus when you could plan the logistics. There's a lot involved. We do ask for your patience, but that is just by way of explanation to walk you through some of the context around why it's not as concretely plannable multiple weeks in advance. But as we've been rolling this out, rest assured that as we get those vaccines, we're quickly moving to get them into people's shoulders. And I think as we do that, we're seeing that a lot of folks are being able to get vaccinated, and we're super excited about that. The other is, you know, we've been really thankful more than anything, not just for the science of the vaccines, but also for the Commonwealth and for the feds in helping get these vaccines into our hands so that we can then in turn administer them to the folks working down the list, as I mentioned. I think the other, and I'm going to start sounding like a broken record, but this question comes up a lot, so I think it's important to reiterate. Just because we have the vaccine, it is not time to let up on all the other preventive measures, whether it's the masking or the distancing or otherwise. Because as I said, until we get the virus levels sufficiently low throughout our communities, we're going to need to continue to take those precautionary measures. So I think that's a good reminder for everybody. So please help us communicate that. Before we get to the questions, maybe I'll just take a few moments just to close with a couple comments. I think it's an exciting time. And it's an exciting time for everybody. I know many of our employees super excited. I myself very excited. But I think it's also met with the sobering reality that we have this activity level of the virus, which is at very concerning levels. And so we're still months away from gradually being able to return to normal. And in the meantime, we have to do the same kind of precautions and keep our vigilance up and continue to manage the services and the capacity in all the same ways that I've been talking about. I think the other is please continue to think twice and be careful around gatherings and such, because that's really what's going to buy us the time to get enough vaccine out there and to get the activity level of the virus to a more manageable spot. So let me pull up there and hand it back over to Matt, who could walk us through some of the questions.
Thank you, Dr. Rowe. First couple questions are about the vaccine rollout from WKOK and the Press Enterprise. Geisinger satisfied with where the rollout stands in the federal government's program, and what, if anything, do we think can be done better?
So I can comment on what our experience has been, and I think it's as we get the vaccines, and we're seeing the shipments come in, and it's coming in with greater regularity, and I think that's very reassuring. And as we get those shipments, as I mentioned earlier, we're racing to make sure that we can get them into people's bodies as quickly as possible. All those logistics and the requirements that I walked through, yes, we're working through all of that, but the key is going through that process and still being able to administer the vaccine to as many people as possible, working through those prioritization groups. That's been a big part of our effort. So I think we're really pleased with the momentum and the start. We're off to a good start. We just need to continue to build on that.
I also got some questions about the UK variant that's now been detected in the US and in Pennsylvania. WKOK asks, what does Geisinger know about this variant? There are some cases, how concerning is this, and can the vaccine protect against it?
Yeah, so we've been hearing about whether it's the UK variant or other variants, and it's not uncommon for viruses to mutate over time. That's something that we've seen, you know, even from before COVID. The good thing here is that clinically, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. We still treat it the same. The same precautions that I mentioned apply. And from what we know, the vaccine should be effective against these variants as well. Now, what is concerning about these variants is that they're reported to be a lot more contagious. And so the activity level of the virus could pick up, because with the same kind of interaction, they might have a higher chance of being spread among the community. And so that's something we're keeping our eyes on. But as far as what you do with somebody with the disease, the variant or otherwise, that doesn't make any difference. And that is reassuring. There are other variants out there other than the UK. We continue to track what's going on in the industry around us and continue to keep our eyes on what we're seeing there. So I think there will be more to come, but at least as of now, the reassuring things are, it doesn't change what we do, doesn't change the vaccine effort, doesn't change the prevention effort. And if someone does contract the disease and get sick from it, it doesn't change the treatment algorithms as well.
Okay, very similar from North Central PA. Health physicians identify this strain, and as you already mentioned, does it change any of the treatment?
Yeah, and I think we probably touched on that and answered most of those elements, Matt. But the other thing, most RNA viruses, they do mutate. So that is not something that we should be surprised by. But we do need to keep our eyes on it to make sure, you know, that it doesn't entail a different approach that needs to be taken. But thus far, there's nothing to suggest or no evidence to suggest that it would necessitate those things.
Another from WKOK, there seems to be a growing amount of patient-oriented healthcare workers who decline to get the vaccine. Has Geisinger encountered this, and what would you say to those healthcare workers?
So far, we've been really pleased with the uptake among our employees. Now, we hope, obviously, that everybody gets vaccinated. And I think getting back to the earlier question, is there something where, of course, you want everybody to get vaccinated as quickly as possible, and that's not just our employees, it's in the entire community. But thus far with our employees, as I mentioned, you know, we're 3 weeks in now and we've gotten about half of our employees vaccinated. We think that's pretty good, or at least it's a solid start. And that'll continue to work its way through in the coming weeks. And I think there are some who are still sort of deciding, but generally when we put appointments out, they've been snatched up pretty quickly, which means that uptake is very strong. And we couldn't be happier. Now, at the same time, we're trying to get information out there, because to the extent people have questions about the vaccine, we think making sure that people are as informed as possible is going to be a good way to make sure they feel comfortable getting the vaccine. We feel absolutely comfortable with the safety and the process that the development went through, and the studies. The 95% effectiveness, that is tremendous for a vaccine. And so we're excited about that.
The Sub-Gazette and NorthCentralPA.com ask, has Geisinger had any vaccine recipients show a reaction to the vaccine, severe allergic reactions or otherwise?
So as I mentioned, we've delivered over 14,000 at this point, and I'm going to knock on wood here. We have not seen any case of severe anaphylactic reaction, meaning the severe allergies. Now, what we do see is people, the most typical thing is people complain that their shoulder's a little sore for a day or two. Sometimes people may have some malaise. Maybe they have some upper respiratory symptoms. Not unlike what you would see with other vaccines, like when you get a flu vaccine, for example. And so we do hear reports of that. It's also why we require everybody to be monitored for 15 minutes and stay put in the room before going home or going back to wherever they're going, so that we could ensure that if they do have a reaction, they're in the absolute right place for it, and we are equipped to take care of whatever happens. Now, again, luckily, we really haven't had to do that. There have been some folks, you know, who don't like needles and have fainted or passed out with the sight of the needle. That's something we see all the time with vaccines. So nothing really unique to the vaccine beyond your typical kind of responses. And luckily, again, nothing to the level of the severe allergic response. Now, you should know across the country, the chances of getting that severe allergic response are about 1 in 100,000. And so it's very rare. But that, again, is why we make people wait for 15 minutes, because even though it's rare, it could happen. And we want to make sure that it's safe before they're ready to go home.
WKOK asks, there's still some questions as to what's next when someone gets the vaccine and if they can still get the virus. Can you explain why we still need to take precautions?
Yeah, so a couple things on this. What was studied with the vaccine was whether they will progress as a result of the infection, whether folks will get the disease that we know as COVID, whether they'll get sick, whether they'll have those symptoms that require hospitalization. That disease is what the virus vaccine prevents, and it prevents it to the tune of 95% effectiveness. That's pretty good. What's not known or what's not totally clear is, can you still harbor the virus and be able to spread it despite having received the vaccine? So you might get the vaccine, and the question is, could you still have an infection? It doesn't produce the disease with all of the sickness and so forth, but can you still spread the virus? That's not known, and that's why it's important that we still maintain the masking, the distancing, and the hand hygiene. Now, over time, what'll happen is you get enough people vaccinated, the activity level of the virus will continue to decline, and that's really what puts an end to the pandemic. And so the vaccine is exactly the right intervention that's going to get us to a different point of this pandemic. But just because you've been vaccinated, it doesn't mean that you can take the mask off and so forth until we as a community hit that level where we have enough people vaccinated so that the virus activity level drops. There's a lot there, not to try to, you know, get into the epidemiology of things, but I think that's important for folks to understand.
And Fox 56 asks, what has Geisinger been seeing in terms of the flu this year?
So again, knock on wood, the flu activity thus far has not been as significant as what we've seen in typical years. It's still early in the flu season, so it's probably a little premature to celebrate that. But I think there is something to be said for the fact that to the extent people are doing the masking and staying distanced and being careful about hand hygiene, I think that's got the tangential benefit. Obviously, we do it to try to tamp down on the COVID activity, but I think the other benefit of it is I think it's really reduced the activity level of flu.
Thank you, Dr. Ruth. That concludes our time today. Thank you, everyone who joined. I know there were some questions we didn't get to.